broadcast on 16 stations in Canada and the United States. You've got Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. It's radioactive. Our next speaker, Rex Weiler, is one of the original Greenpeace gang, author of Greenpeace, The Inside Story, plus two more books. Rex sees the links between degrading the Earth and our economic collapse. Here is key minutes from Rex Weiler's speech to the Biosociety Conference at McMaster University in Canada on March 20th, 2009.
First of all, we're in the middle of an economic collapse. This economic collapse has biophysical underpinnings. I believe that this economic collapse is at its base, at its roots, is an ecological collapse, and I will talk about why I believe that. And one thing I've noticed with all the speakers today, and myself included, is that we all want to be positive, we all want to be optimistic and make you feel better, and yet a lot of the data and a lot of the information that we're bringing to you is very troubling. So first of all, we want realism. And I think that without realism, Our optimism can be delusional, and we want to avoid false solutions. So we'll start with realism. Back in the 50s, in the 1950s, Paul Sears made the comment that ecology was going to prove to be the subversive science. And I think that we believed this in the 1970s when Greenpeace was started, and the reason it's going to be the subversive science, it's going to undercut everything else we do. Because throughout human history, we have kind of developed this concept and this idea that we are masters of our environment. And what we're going to learn through ecology is that we're not masters of our environment at all. We are, in fact, embedded in a biophysical system, and that we're going to have to learn from it. We're not just going to whip it into shape or manage it. We have to go through a paradigm shift of really unprecedented proportions. Certainly as profound as the paradigm shift in the 16th century when Copernicus and then later Kepler and Galileo pointed out that the whole universe may not be going around us, that in fact we may be orbiting the sun. At the time, you have to understand, in the 16th century, this was a profound idea, and people had a very hard time getting it through their heads that this might be possible. And I think that we're going to have to get a similar paradigm shift in our time. And just as Copernicus showed that we're not the center of the universe, I think ecology is going to show us that we're not the center of life on the planet, and the rest of the life on the planet does not revolve around our needs. Between 1990 and now, we have blown past our carrying capacity. According to calculations by Bill Reese at the University of British Columbia, who developed the ecological footprint concept, we're into 30% overshoot already. Humanity is using 30% more stuff. Now, I told you we were going to do the realism part first. We'll get to the optimism part second. What we were talking about earlier when we were on our way in here was bring your own optimism. I'm going to give you the data as I understand it. I'm not trying to be optimistic or pessimistic. I'm trying to be realistic. And I stay optimistic, too. I try to keep a sense of humor about it, too. As my friend Wavy Gravy says, without a sense of humor, it's just not funny anymore. Okay, so 30% overshoot. Now, we've lowered the carrying capacity of the planet, and we've blown past it. Now, does anybody think we can keep going there at 3.5% growth? How about 1%? What if we do an unprecedented? We talk about innovation and efficiencies. What if we have an unprecedented innovation over the next 20 years or next 30 years in which we actually reduce our throughput per unit of GDP from 3.5% to 1%. It's never been done before, not even remotely close. Our throughput pretty much tracks our population growth and our GDP. So let's say we do have this massive, innovative, technological renaissance in which we actually create all these efficiencies. Even at 1% growth, we're still going to double, divided into 70, 1 into 70 is 70, we're going to double our throughput in 70 years. We're halfway through the forest. We're 90% through some fish species. We're 95% through the marine mammals. We're halfway through the oil, the easy-to-get oil. We've used up the cheap oil. We've used up all the high net energy oil. We high-graded everything. So when we say we're halfway through the forest in acreage, in hectares, we're halfway through the forest, but we high-graded that forest. And we've high-graded the oil. We've high-graded the natural gas, and we've high-graded the soils and everything else that we've used. and we've driven the carrying capacity down. So if we keep doing this for another 70 years to 2080, we're not going to be 30% into overshoot, we're going to be 300% into overshoot, and the order of magnitude higher percentage of overshoot. I call this the Wile E. Coyote moment. Wile E. Coyote always ran off the edge of the cliff and then looked around and realized there was nothing under him. And we thought that was so funny. Well, here's the problem, is that all these growth scenarios, so we talk about sustainable growth. Well, sustainable growth is an oxymoron. Now, sustainable development is conceivable if you talk about qualitative development. But growth, we know, in a biophysical system, remember the fruit flies, remember the bacteria in the petri dish, mussels on the seashore. In any biophysical system, there's a limit. All growth in a biophysical, or as Albert Bartlett says, if you want to learn about growth, Google Albert Bartlett and look at his videos about exponential growth. You'll learn what you need to know about growth. But here's something that Dr. Albert Bartlett says. He's from the University of Colorado near my hometown in Colorado. He says this, all growth after maturity is either obesity or cancer. Is that not true? Yes, it's true. And the further we run out, the further we run out on these growth scenarios, believing that we're going to create some groovy innovation that's going to save us, we're only setting ourselves up for a crash. And that's why I'm saying that the economic crash that we're experiencing right now is in fact an environmental crash. We grew up in a forest. That's how we evolved. We need to take a step back, and we need to look at this and look at the miracle of our lives. Look at the miracle of nature. Learn how nature works. Now we're the meteorite. We've initiated this next extinction period. And the question is, how far down can we drive it? And was there some carrying capacity that it was bumping up against there? We don't really know. But what we do know is that, you know, after every crash, it came back. It came roaring back. Life will come roaring back, even after us, no matter what we do. So the issue we face isn't that we're going to destroy the planet or destroy life on the planet. It's that we are destroying our ability to live the life that we've come to know. We have to approach this from the other direction. Rather than little innovations that are going to make us, you know, we often hear the expression, more sustainable. What does more sustainable mean? Well, we sort of know what that means. It means a little bit closer to sustainable. But if you're not sustainable, you're not sustainable. Does more sustainable mean you can cling on a little longer? Is that what that means? We either discover sustainability or we don't. What we need to focus on is actually recovering this carrying capacity. We need to, when we talk about healing the planet, we're talking about recovering the lost carrying capacity. Now, is that doable? Yeah, that's doable. But it's not about building Priuses. It's going to take much more than that. We need to find a level of consumption below the carrying capacity. There's only one way to get this back on track. It's to consume less stuff. We're not talking about a drop between 3.5% and 1% of throughput. We're talking about less throughput, less stuff. And we're talking about a dramatically less amount of stuff. Now, here's a message no one wants to deliver. I don't want to deliver it. I don't want to be standing here in front of you telling you that we all have to use 50% or 90% less stuff. I don't want to tell my own children that we have to use less stuff, that in their lifetime they're going to have to use half the stuff I've enjoyed in my lifetime. And I can certainly tell you there's not a politician on the planet that wants to deliver this message, and no newspaper or magazine wants to deliver this message because they make a living selling stuff. And every corporation, every company in the world makes money by selling you stuff. So how are we going to do this? And this is why I think it's true. We need a religious paradigm. We need a new vision. We need a new sense of morality. And we need a whole new vision of who we are. And we're not going to sort of baby step our way into this. We're going to have some... We need a dramatic shift. Now, I grew up in a time... I went to high school in a little town in West Texas that was segregated. I went to a white high school. Now imagine that. Whites in one school, blacks in the other. And this was before women's rights as well. And I can tell you, I grew up in a very patriarchal society when young women did not have the opportunities that you have. And those things changed. We changed those things. But we change them by people standing up and making a stand and saying that they will not tolerate the old way anymore. And that's going to take the same thing. That here's where my optimism comes from. And I'm actually a very optimistic person. I have my own children, and I talk to them about this all the time. And I do not hide from them the reality that we're in. And I tell them, you have to be part of a major change in human understanding of who we are. And it's about using less stuff. I'm here with my friend Andrea from Toronto. She unplugged her fridge several years ago. She lives without a fridge. Now, maybe that's just the start, but that's the direction we have to go. Everything I'm wearing, everything I've worn for the last 2 decades is recycled. We do all of our shopping at the secondhand store. We do not buy new stuff. Our entire home, we live in a nice home, we have comfortable chairs to sit in, we have a nice dining room table, it's all secondhand. We live off the waste stream of our community.
You're listening to author and activist Rex Wyler on Radio EcoShock. Green 960 AM, Progressive Radio, the heart of San Francisco.
So here's my one suggestion. You know, make environmental responsibility your fashion statement. Don't buy new stuff. And I know a lot of people have been picking on cell phones today. And maybe cell phones are okay, but buying a new cell phone every couple of years and upgrading everything in every couple of years, that's not okay. Buy stuff that will endure. And your identity of who you are is not about how much stuff you have. And we have to get this through our heads. And if the rich 20%, which includes everybody in this room, the rich 20% on the planet are using 80% of the stuff, go figure it out. And if we're at 30% overshoot already, and the rich 20% are using 80% of the stuff, and we want ecology and social justice on the planet, do the math. For starters, we're not going to ask the poor 80% who are barely making it to give up what they're consuming. We're the ones that are going to have to give it up just to get back to from 130% of the throughput of the carrying capacity down to 100%, and be nice to be below that. So for starters, we have to give up probably 40% of our stuff, of our throughput. Now, this does not mean we cannot have a higher quality of life. And this is the important thing. But we have to find this soft landing. Now, by the way, this less consumption is only like 1970s level of throughput. You know, people say, well, we can't go back to the Stone Age. Well, newsflash here, this is not the Stone Age we're talking about. This is just ending our wasteful lifestyle and all our throwaway stuff and all our garbage. We have to get to zero garbage. In nature, there's zero garbage. I think that was said a couple of times today. There's no waste in nature. In nature, everything's recycled. So we got to do the same thing. We do have to mimic nature. If we don't, we learn the Wile E. Coyote gravity lesson. We crash. Just like every other species, just like the reindeer on St. Matthew's Island, just like the fruit flies, just like the people on Easter Island, if we think we can blow past our carrying capacity and just keep going and keep making our stone statues, we will crash. And this is why I say the economic crash we're experiencing right now, at its base, at its roots, it's an ecological crash. We have met the limits. Human society, in its aggregate consumption, has met the limits of the planet. And there's not going to be a recovery like in the 30s. They talk about everybody wants to stimulate the economy. What do they want to stimulate it to? Back up to 3% growth, 4% global growth? Won't happen. It's not going to happen. We got to find that magic place below the carrying capacity, and that we need to put every bit of our focus on finding that. You need to learn that lesson, and this is the lesson we have to learn, and this is why I say it's a dramatic lesson, because there's nobody in our culture that wants to deliver the message. Our politicians don't want to deliver it. Our media don't want to deliver it. And we don't want to deliver it. We're all somehow hooked into this. We're all invested. How about these people? These are people in Brazil. They have never contacted modern human society. These people are sustainable. They just need the forest. That's all they need. Leave them alone. They're fine. Now, they don't have all the cool things we have. They don't have video games. They have nature, though. Their children grow up in nature. Their children grow up in the forest. But my point isn't that we all have to be farmers or we don't have to be Amish. We just have to use less stuff. And we can have rich lives. that happiness is not about consumption. Happiness is not about stuff. Happiness is about creativity. It's about being with our friends. It's about having a family. It's about having someone who cares for you. It's about having friends. Happy people are people who have someone that cares about them. It's really simple. And as we chase more stuff and we get more alienated from each other, we don't discover happiness. So what we're talking about here is the quality of our lives. We're not talking about reducing quality of our lives. And we don't all have to be hippies or Amish and farmers. We just have to live simpler lives and realize that happiness isn't about stuff. Happiness is about having friends and family and some creativity. The Gucci bag isn't happiness. The Gucci swimsuit is not happiness. Happiness is having people around you who love you and who will care for you. These gamblers, their culture is going to crash. It's not sustainable. There's a nice community garden. This is what we need to do. We just need to simplify. And in urban populations and urban centers, we just need to simplify and be reasonable and be smart about it. We need to remember where we come from. We need to learn and remember what it is that keeps us alive. It's the biosphere that keeps us alive. I'm going to make a list of things we should do. And I started making the list. It's endless, the list of things we should do. But here's some of them. We should eliminate cars and build public transportation. At the very least, if we're going to survive, we're going to survive with public transportation. The car culture is over. And it was a mistake. It was a bad idea when it was started. And by the way, you know why we all drive cars in North America? Not because it was a consumer choice. It was a choice by General Motors, Standard Oil, and Firestone Tires in the 1930s, formed a company called National City Lines, and they bought up every light rail public transportation system in North America. In Canada, they couldn't buy them, so they just came up here and they bribed city councils with free Cadillacs, and they ripped up the tracks. It wasn't a consumer decision to turn North America into a car culture. It was a corporate decision to turn America and Canada into car cultures. And they were successful. And they made a lot of money selling oil and tires and cars to human beings. When we could have had a really nice light rail public transportation system. I don't know how many of you have ever lived in Europe, but I've lived in Amsterdam and Zurich and other places, and it's no problem. You don't need a car. You walk out of your home. You walk down to the corner. You get on the streetcar. You go to the central station. You go to any address in Europe. And while you're traveling, by the way, you're reading a book or talking to friends or meeting new friends or having breakfast. And you're not sitting behind a wheel swearing at the other drivers. So we need to eliminate cars, build public transport. We need to convert the car space. 40% of our average city is space for cars, automobiles. Convert it all to food production, gardens. We need to stabilize and reduce human population. This is a topic that rarely comes up in international discussion. No one wants to bring it up. And someone said today, how do you reduce human population? It's very easy. Women's rights, first of all, globalize women's rights. Canada should refuse to do business with any nation that doesn't have equal rights for women. Because when women have the choice to how many children they want, they have less children. And if you make contraception available, they have way less children. So it doesn't take draconian government rules like the one-child policy. It just takes common sense. We have to reduce our CO2 emissions by 80%, and that's to keep the sea rise at 4 meters and not 7 or 8. Or if the whole thing melts, if all the ice on the planet melts, we're talking about 60 meters of sea rise, and that's adios. That's a brand new restart for civilization. We'll be lucky if primates survive, but we probably will. But we need to avoid that. So the CO2 emissions that we need are dramatic. We have to reduce our throughput of matter and energy. We have to recycle everything 100%. We need new building codes, heat pumps, insulation, proper building codes. We need to preserve every square inch of farmland and forest. We need to preserve wilderness. We need to reduce our meat consumption. We need to be building dikes. We need to go up to the 2-meter level and start building dikes for another 2 meters just to give our next generation a chance. We need global education, literacy building. We need to localize our communities. Our survival is now about resilience because we are going to have global warming and we are going to have the sea rise. So what we need to do now is build strong communities that take care of each other. We're not this whole idea that we're all on our own and we're all, every individual for themselves. It's not going to work. What's going to survive are communities that are resilient. And finally, the last thing on this list is take care of each other. That's how we're going to make it happen. We're going to take care of each other. You have to think like a hero. I love this from Maysart. And you have to think like a hero to behave like a normal, decent human being. So when we think about all these things that we need to do, it just seems overwhelming. Just pick one. Pick one thing on this list and dedicate the rest of your life to it until it's solved in your community. And when you solve it in your community, see if you can solve it in your region. And when you can solve it in your region, you can use your experience to help solve it on the rest of the planet. Don't be overwhelmed. Just get active. I'll tell you, activism is the best thing that ever happened to me. I went to school as a scientist. I was going to be an aerospace scientist. I discovered ecology in university. I've been an environmental activist ever since, for 40 years. Activism is the best thing that ever happened to me because at least I feel like I'm doing something. Every day of my life, I can look my kids in the face and I can say, it's going to be really bad, but it's not going to be really bad because I never did anything. And the other thing is, being active, and it doesn't mean you have to give up your careers. You can be whatever you want to be. You can finish your science degrees, you can get good jobs, you can do all kinds of things. But there has to be a part of your life which is helping to solve these problems. You have to think like a hero. But no, I'm not talking about a dramatic Hollywood hero. I'm talking about ordinary heroes, you and I, and Andrea, who unplugs her fridge, and our friends who give up their cars and just buy and recycle clothes instead of new clothes. My friend David Abram, who wrote a beautiful book called The Spell of the Sensuous, he says, sooner or later, technological civilization must accept the invitation of gravity and settle back into the land, the more than human world. It's a beautiful world. Nature is beautiful. Imagine discovering this planet. It's a beautiful place. And it's even going to be beautiful even when we're struggling to survive in a different way. It's still going to be beautiful. Nature is very healing. And there's a lot of joy and pleasure in nature. Simple lives are going to be fine. And I'm not worried about my kids having to work hard for the rest of their lives. I'm not worried about them having to get up every morning and grow food and work hard. That's okay. I just want to avoid the crash as much as possible. Rilke says, again and again, some people in the crowd wake up. They have no ground in the crowd, and they emerge according to much broader laws. They carry strange customs with them and demand room for bold gestures. The future speaks ruthlessly through them. That's us. That's you. You have to lead us. All the great changes in human history have been led by people like you and me, by citizens, by private citizens. Civil rights was not eliminated by governments. It was eliminated by people standing up and saying, we won't tolerate it anymore. Women's rights were brought into society, not by governments, not by corporations, by women standing up and saying, this is ridiculous and we won't take it anymore. That's the way all change happens. It's up to you. And Arne Næss, who founded the deep ecology movement, who just died recently, Norwegian philosopher, this sums it all up. Richer lives, simpler means. We don't need more stuff. We just need to be in nature, take care of each other, nurture our family, take care of our friends, nurture our friends, be nice to each other, that we can have much richer lives with less stuff. That's the good news. And we can do it. You and I can do it. We can stand up and say, we're going to make this world different. And by the way, if we don't have any choice. We're going to get to sustainability either by our choices or by nature's choices. And let me tell you, Mother Nature is very patient and beautiful, but she's not sentimental. So if we want to find a soft landing into this sustainable life, we have to make those choices. And we can. We can do it. You can do it. Thank you very much.
That Rex Weiler speech comes from Maggie Hughes, producer of The Other Side of the News on 93.3 FM CFMU McMaster University Radio, which also broadcasts Radio EcoShock. Find Maggie's website at www.oside.ca. You have been listening to the Radio EcoShock Show with me, Alex Smith. Find our website at ecoshock.org. And thank you again for caring about our world.